Zombie takeout is an ugly thing.
Welcome to episode 179 of Zombie
Takeout,
the B-movie and cult movie podcast. I'm Uncle John.
And I'm Scotto.
And before we get to this week's movie, just a little pseudo-news item. Last week we talked about Under the Skin, the Scarlett Johansson species-esque movie.
Yes.
They have a trailer now.
I thought we discussed that 2 weeks ago, actually.
Was it 2 weeks ago? Okay, could have been. Highly recommend checking it out. Looks surprisingly good. I think they're going for kind of an old-school 70s, 60s kind of feel. Feels nice. A lot like Clockwork, has a bit of a Black Rainbow vibe. There's a shot that reminds me of Dune, believe it or not. So if you haven't seen it, it's on the Facebook page. Check it out. The movie might be really good. And that brings us to this week's movie, which is from 1975, A Boy and His Dog, and of course the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by Quilla June Dog Food. It may not have particularly good taste, but it'll do in a pinch.
And also brought to you by Down Under. No reruns of The Prisoner on TV tonight? Come on, watch some Down Under.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we have a boy, mm-hmm. and he's with his dog. Mm-hmm. No, it's of course. Yes, it is of course the post-apocalypse, mm-hmm. and no post-apocalypse is complete without a shit ton of sand.
Yeah. And a guy in sort of bizarre clothing on a makeshift barge pushed by a ton of people.
Yeah.
Who every Mad Max villain had to be inspired by.
Yeah. A lot of this seems like, you know, the whole movie theater scene. But anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a young man. Not really a boy. He's like actually in his 20s.
He's 18, actually.
Don Johnson,
well,
though.
Don Johnson was probably in his 20s. The character is 18.
Yeah. I had to look at the age. He's about 26. Okay. Doesn't look 26, though. He does pass for someone in his late teens, early 20s. But he is out alone in the world with no one but his dog, who he somehow communicates with. And the dog, of course, has the keen sense, can tell how many people are, you know, in a certain area. And, of course, what he really cares about, Don Johnson, that is, the ladies.
Due to genetic engineering, the dog is telepathic, but also lost its ability to hunt as a trade-off. So Vic, Don Johnson's character, gets it food, and it finds women for him.
And, well, he finds a lady in a bunker, and she is well, actually he kind of stalks her a bit, you know, he picks up her scent, he follows, there's a bit of a hunt, and he, you know, sneaks up on her and goes to take her, and then of course she is saved because they are under attack by the Reavers. And
basically.
And
really, this time.
Although these guys you never actually see, they just give a glowing green light, and that's about it.
But if they said, you know, they'll rape us to death, then skin us, and then sew our skins into their clothes, and if you're lucky, they'll do it in that order. If that line was in this movie, it would have fit in perfectly.
Very true. So they, of course.
Yes, I'm that much of a brown coat.
they of course successfully. They don't really fight them off. They just kind of wait them out. Mm-hmm. And then a very brief relationship occurs over one night and I don't know how many times. Mm-hmm. And until she clocks him in the head and takes off.
Yeah.
Leaving behind a key card to get into a door.
And all of this was explained very cryptically earlier in the movie, if you've seen it twice, or in hindsight can remember the scene.
So then he of course decides to follow her, and he goes into her underground, I don't know what you want to call it, their underground world, where it is remarkably like the prisoner. And well,
I'm glad I'm not the only one who thought that, because I wasn't quite sure.
Oh, it very much was. But you see, what really happens here is that the world underground is sort of turned upside down. On the top side of the world, women are pretty much just hunted down and taken at will, killed, raped.
Women are the vast minority on the top side.
On the bottom side, the men, for the most part, with the exception of one member of the council, men are just used as props and almost farm equipment for other humans. If that makes any sense. If you've seen this...
Actually, that is a very good analogy.
Perfect sense.
Yeah.
If you have not seen this, you think... I have been sniffing glue.
Or actually more farm animals with the equipment hooked up to them.
Well, right, right. They are treated just as chattel. And literally. And of course, he must break free. And hilarity ensues.
Now, starting just at the top of the movie. I think the whole nuclear war angle, this takes place, of course, after nuclear war. They really hit it over the head. You get about a good 30 seconds of just shots of mushroom clouds.
And it was actually the most jarring use of them that I've ever seen in film. Usually, it's quite cheesy because there's like this huge buildup to the atomic bomb going off.
And they just, right off the top, hit you over the head with the mushroom clouds.
There's a black screen for I forget how many seconds. And then the first thing is, of course, the mushroom cloud and the explosion is kind of like, what?
And then it has a great opening crawl. World War IV lasted 5 days. Politicians had finally solved the problem of urban blight.
Yeah.
This is set in 2024, so it's a little bit into the future, quite far into the future as in 75.
Well, and they were only about, what, 8 years away from the Cold War really ending?
Actually, it was written in 69, I think. It's based on cycle of narratives by Harlan Ellison.
Okay. I thought it was 74. But
the movie was 75.
But yeah, yeah.
The books 75. Were set, the narratives were set, were 69.
Wow. So, yeah, anyway, they're only about 8 years off or so, because they claim that the World War III, hot and cold, ends in 83.
Which wasn't that early. And in one scene, Blood, the dog, is having Vic list off the presidents. And I loved that there were three Kennedys after Ford.
Well, that was the plan, wasn't it?
Teddy was going to be next, and, you know, we know what happened.
Well, I mean, before that, really, that was the plan where, you know, each son was going to have a turn kind of thing. And, you know, the assassinations, of course, and then some buffoonery ended that plan.
This also kind of caught me off guard when I realized that 2024 is actually only 11 years away.
Well, of course, you always think of Wrath of Khan where they're talking about the eugenics wars of the 1990s
stuff.
But this all still, you know, has yet to go.
As I've said before, giving science fiction a specific year creates a problem when we get to that year or near it.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes you just have to write for the now.
Well, but that's why you want to vague it up a bit.
Yeah.
You know, in the distant future, thousands of years, whatever.
Sort of like The Simpsons when they're looking at the map to point out where Springfield is and then the back of someone's head blocks off.
And it's also convenient that there's a Springfield in every state.
Right, right.
Now, I gotta say, my favorite part of the movie, my favorite character, Blood. I loved the dog.
Yes, I was very much surprised that I was going to like a talking dog. Well, let's pose this question right now. Did Blood really talk?
He was telepathic. His thoughts were, oh, you're saying it was all in Vic's head.
I think it's an excellent question to
I've
ask.
actually never considered that. But that is a distinct possibility.
Right. We assume, I mean, that you never heard the other dog talk.
Oh, no.
Like, he kind of stares at him and stuff.
And Quilla couldn't hear him, and if he was telepathic, he could theoretically talk to anybody.
And the council assumed that he could talk to the other dog because perhaps
They saw him talking to his dog.
Yeah, Holmes probably told the council that he talked to the dog.
Wasn't just Quilla. They were scouting him.
Oh, that's right, they
I
were.
only noticed this the second time, but there's a scene where you see these basically the feet of a person with, blue wrapped shoes.
That's right, I forgot all about that.
And they say he'll do nicely or something of that nature. And then the camera shows them again, and there's actually three of them. And they say, set the trap and get the cheese or something of that nature.
Yeah.
They're scouting him. They plan to bring him back. Quilla was a trap.
Damn,
She
I
was the
forgot
cheese.
all about that. It was just kind of like an image. It just kind of
Yeah.
went in one ear and out the other. But you are so fucking right.
It's
It was
very
set up from
quick.
the beginning.
It's so quick that you probably won't remember it the first time by the time you know what happens. But the second time, which is, and for me, this is the second time seeing it, it sticks out like a sore thumb.
I bet, yeah. Yeah, it was kind of like weird that, they're at first I thought it was somebody else. I mean, I thought it was Vic. But then I was like, wait a minute, the jeans look so new and the feet are wrapped and what? Yeah.
And they were busy watching the Mad Max film at the time and planning to steal the food. Now, in reference to Vic, I gotta say, Johnson kind of surprised me because he's not a great actor by any means, but he worked really well in the role.
Probably the best performance I've seen him in, and probably not the last Don Johnson movie we will do
Right.
in Zombie Takeout if we ever get to Harley Davidson and the Marlboro Man.
Oh my, yeah, he should, I suppose. He was good. Well, he was adequate. He was passable.
Yeah.
Until he had to do a scene with Jason Robards.
Well, who could really share
Oh yeah.
much time with Jason Robards? I mean, holy fuck. I didn't even recognize him at first. It was another one of
Oh yeah.
those took a minute to like, wait, that's fucking Jason Robards with the stash.
And also with Vic, I gotta say, it's very brave on Ellison's part, the original writer, to make the lead character so unlikable.
Well,
Vic is
I
the
think
protagonist, but he is despicable.
that's the point.
Yeah.
It's the whole, I don't know where mankind is going and how the genders each see each other. It's weird how this whole movie is just about, gender equality and inequality.
Oh yeah, it definitely serves the point of the movie, but it's still a brave choice for a writer to make your lead, your protagonist, an asshole.
Well, there's the ending, which we can't really spoil, can we?
Well, I kind of almost already did if you. Well, I guess. But we won't talk any more specifically about it. Now we've been talking about the Road Warrior. This was 5 years before the Road Warrior.
Of course,
And it
and
is the template.
it was better done too
Oh,
than the
much.
Road Warrior.
The first part of this
Well,
movie,
than
the
Mad Max, at least.
well, I would say the Road Warrior too. The post-apocalyptic part, because this is really two movies. The post-apocalyptic part at the beginning is really the template for the Road Warrior. The one villain, I guess he was a villain. He was kind of the local, slave owner. He was a Mad Max villain.
Yeah.
Vic was Max, effectively. He was the man with no name. He just wasn't helping people. There is so much that the Road Warrior specifically, because Mad Max was a different movie. That wasn't post-apocalyptic desert. But
True.
Road Warrior, and of course later, Thunderdome took so much from this movie. It really, I remembered that, but it really struck me watching it this time.
You know, the town in Thunderdome might as well been on the set that was the movie theater here.
Oh, yeah.
It is like they just took the same set and just more sequins.
With regard to the cast, the thing that really struck me is the chemistry between Vic and Blood. They have great chemistry, and it's Don Johnson having chemistry with a disembodied voice.
Well, you know, you gotta give props to Don Johnson just for eating the fucking popcorn.
Yeah. Because the dog eats it first.
Right. And then, you know, eats some more, and then he eats it. Props.
Oh, speaking of influence, I also think it was a big influence on Firefly. We mentioned the Reavers. The way Vic speaks is very similar to the language on Firefly. And
True.
he's kind of a cross between Mal and Jane.
I think so, yeah.
So this movie was, I mean, a lot of people talk about how this is one of the greatest science fiction movies of all time, and it's kind of, one of the lesser known. But I didn't really realize until watching it this time how influential it really is.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously, the Mad Max, the whole trilogy ripped this off from one end to the other. But of course, it's not, as we talked about the last act, because really there's three movies here.
Well, I say two because you have the post-apocalyptic desert down
Yeah.
below, and then he goes back to the post-apocalyptic desert. I mean, it's a very quick ending, but
Well, that's just kind of an epilogue.
yeah.
Really, what you have, though, is you have, you know, life out in the desert where the women are, you know, hunted. Then you have held up in the bunker, which is pretty much
Oh,
like
okay, yeah.
the middle section,
All right.
and then the final section, the prisoner.
Right. Or what I also was thinking, a lot of Clockwork influence reminded me a lot of Clockwork
True.
and Zardoz. It kind of has that 70s, 60s, 70s British sci-fi feel to it.
But why you keep coming back to the prisoner?
Oh, I definitely thought Prisoner as well, yeah.
It had the same, you know, it was,
Everybody's happy.
well, there was this mix of futuristic oppression with that whole Gilded Age style.
Yeah.
Because remember the prisoner, everybody was dressed from like, you know, turn of the
Right,
century.
right.
You know, they all had that, you know, 1900, 1910s kind
Yeah.
of outfit on.
And this is sort of a 40s middle America kind of look.
In some ways, but they were, you know, they had kind of like a colonial dress for the women,
Yeah, true,
almost.
true.
But it was still very Gilded Age, a lot of it. They still had, you know, some of them had the suits, you know, suit jackets
True,
from
yeah.
that time period. Not sure what the white face was about.
Yeah, though there was some kind of festival going on at the time.
It seemed like only elders
Yeah.
had the white face and kids did not.
And I think that's what gave me the Zardoz feel.
True.
The white face. And the scene when he's escaping, because it just reminded me of the Orgy of Death for some reason. I also think it was pretty obvious that Quilla June was going to help him escape the first time you see her talking to her father.
Well, yeah.
As he just kind of pats her on the head and says, nice job, and kind of ignores the deal he made with her. So you know she's going to break him out.
You had that whole, this deal's getting worse by the minute kind of, you
Yeah.
know, thing going.
Oh, also, another thing that reminded me of Clockwork was the farm equipment angle. Do we want to get into detail on that?
Now, did she help him because they really had a relationship?
Well, that's the question. Initially, she was the cheese. She was the bait in the trap.
Right.
But I think she believed there was, if not necessarily a relationship. Actually, no. I'm thinking about it now as I'm talking. She didn't think there was a relationship. She saw him as useful. Because she didn't want to escape. She wanted to take down her father and the rest of the council.
Right.
She saw him as someone who knew how to use a gun and could be effective.
And she completely underestimated him by, saying this plan to him.
Right.
Wasn't really talking him into it. There's kind of, I think one of the things they're saying in this is just people are losing the art of communication, to get what they want out of people, and instead of taking it by other means, by force or by guile or, treachery.
Yeah. Oh, also, I just have to nitpick one little thing. When she rescued him, she knocked out the doctor and the minister with a bouquet of flowers.
Did she? I didn't
And there
notice
was no
that.
indication that she was hiding something blunt in the bouquet. She just hit them with this bouquet that she had in her hand as she walked in, and they fell.
You're right. There was a lot of weird stuff.
Although he did have some kind of metal pipe on the way out, maybe that was in there and I didn't notice the reveal.
I don't know. I didn't. There was a lot of weird stuff about the escape. About, robot farmer guys who can take bullets and.
A lot of bullets. Well, he was officially a robot. You did see the sparks and everything at the end.
Yeah.
So
Oh,
he
we
wasn't
gotta
just
get
a
ourselves
Superman.
another get ourselves another
Michael, yes, out of the
Michael
chat.
out of. Well, that doesn't smile as much.
And I think that section between the escape and Michael's death got a little long-winded. I got a little bored.
Yeah, that the whole prisoner sequence, I think that whole stretch, definitely the weakest part of the movie, I think.
Yeah, well, up until the escape, I'm fine with it, because it's just establishing that world. And then they're escaping, and he waits behind this tree and watches the council set up. And I don't know what he's waiting for, because his plan was just to get out of Dodge. She wanted him to kill the council, but he's like waiting there watching until they find him and send Michael after him. And that didn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Nah, I think a lot of, well, like I said, the last act really is the weakest of the three acts. And not just because it's the men that are now being objectified. It's, I don't know, it's more about of the execution, I thought.
Well, yeah, I would agree. That part is the weakest. I think it's because we have certain standards for that sort of thing, like Zardoz, like Clockwork,
And those came before this.
where you have that kind of twisted, overly happy sci-fi utopia that's
Like
very sinister. We've seen
THX.
THX, we've seen that a lot,
Yeah.
and we've seen it done incredibly well.
Yeah,
This wasn't one of them.
I think he was just trying too hard that section. The other sections, the other two acts came naturally. The third act, it seemed like it was, doing the whole underground, but yet they're in a valley kind of thing. It was just too much. It should have just been another bunker of some sort, maybe like a white lit kind of THX looking
Yeah,
place.
possibly. Or I could see doing what they did, just shorten it.
Or making it look more fake.
Yeah, that would be nice, yes.
Instead of just, it really looked like they just filmed at night
They did.
instead of them being inside a place. There's a difference.
Absolutely. Making it look more artificial would have helped a lot.
Right, something like that would have gone a long way, that they were in a real world.
And I think that a lot of that is down to the director, because the cast at that point did very well. At least, the ones we were paying attention to.
Yeah.
Robards, and the other council members, Michael, they all played the parts very well. I don't know how the actor who played Michael kept that smile for every scene he was in.
And the one woman council member was creepy as
Oh,
hell.
yeah.
Holy shit.
She was perfect for that kind of scene, that kind of environment. And Robards was brilliant, but it was too earnest. It was too real, and not creepy enough.
What
I
was
think
the
that's what it comes down to. It wasn't creepy.
what the
The whole Down Under segment,
Oh yeah,
that
just
environment should have been creepy in
exactly.
an unreal kind of way.
It looked too real, yeah.
Oh, incidentally, the film was distributed after its initial run under several other titles, including Psycho Boy and His Killer Dog and Apocalypse 2024.
Huh.
Psycho Boy and His Killer Dog. Actually, they both sound very B.
Yeah, they
I mean,
do.
Apocalypse 2024 is completely forgettable, and Psycho Boy and His Killer Dog sounds like some kind of Psycho Beach Party sort of type of movie, maybe
Yeah.
set in the 50s. I don't know.
But I could definitely see people mistaking this for a kids movie.
Oh yeah, Talking Dog.
A boy and his dog.
The title too, yeah.
Right.
Because I had heard about this movie for many years before I finally got around to seeing it, and it was because it's called A Boy and His Dog, and Don Johnson is in it. I just had no interest, regardless of how good I heard it was. And so one day I saw it on Netflix and figured, eh, why not? And the first time I saw it, I didn't really like it. And I think the ending had a lot to do with that. It just threw me so much.
Really?
I was completely thrown by the ending. Watching it a second time, it was kind of obvious.
I mean, that was quite a ballsy ending.
Oh, absolutely. I just didn't see it coming at all the first time, and it just was a shot upside the head, and it kind of took me several hours to recover from it.
I, of course, surprised me the ending. I didn't see it coming. But when it was revealed what had happened, it was kind of like, wow, they really went there? It makes sense that they went there, but they really went there.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I mean, it makes perfect
Oh,
sense. It's
yeah.
not like a, it's not tacked on or anything whatsoever.
Like I said,
That's.
if you know it's coming, you can see it coming.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when they were scouting him and the trap. If you know that's coming, it's very obvious when they set it up. The ending is very obvious when they set it up if you know it's going to happen. But if you don't know it's going to happen, it's a complete shock to the system.
I think the only surprising thing about it is, the fact that he comes after her. And doesn't give up on her for so much of it. So you're expecting him to kind of, take that behavior all the way through.
But he has certain practicalities.
In the end, yes.
And he chose the pragmatic option.
Right.
Incidentally, on the film's DVD audio commentary, L.Q. Jones states that Harlan Ellison was generally pleased with the movie, with the exception of the final line of dialogue. In the introduction to the Vic and Blood anthology, Ellison criticized the film's moronic, hateful, chauvinist last line, which I despise, quote unquote.
I thought that was the point of the film, though.
Yeah, you're supposed to despise Vic. But I think maybe because it was Blood who delivered the last line.
The point of it was that, there's no growth, that there's no moving on, there's no development. It's just, the downward spiral continues from what had already set up before this whole thing had started.
And he criticizes it for being moronic, hateful, and chauvinist. Isn't that Vic?
Yes. Wow, that's almost like the same person last week criticizing these actors didn't look like they knew what they were doing at all.
Yeah. Okay, one other little criticism. When Vic emerges from down under back to the desert,
He says, good day.
he says Vic must have gone over the hill. And early on, they set up Over the Hill as this sort of utopia
Yeah.
away from the horrors of the desert. Wasn't it pretty obvious that Over the Hill was based on Down Under? The whole legend came from Down Under?
Maybe.
Seemed that way to me, and I would think that he would put it together that where he just was over the hill.
It could be, right? Yeah, I was kind of thinking that too. Hard to say though. I think it seemed like they were setting up a another movie onto this. I think the only criticism I had was about the movie theater scene. Was I'm not sure why they focus so much on the movie itself.
I have in my notes that the choice of movie makes a lot of sense if you know where it's going, but honestly, I don't remember what the movie was now.
Well, it was A
Fistful of
Fistful of
Rawhide
Rawhide.
was the second movie they showed, where they show the credits, and it's just a brief softcore scene.
Well, right. And there's just a bunch of softcore scenes strung
Okay, earlier
together
on it was just that too. Okay.
with like these, lame effects put in. And it just kind of seemed like they really liked that effect and they wanted to use it as much as
Yeah.
humanly possible and work in some softcore scenes.
Well, yeah. Well, if you think about the environment, the setting, if you will, what kind of movies are these guys going to be interested in?
It seemed like whatever they could get their hands on,
Well, but the, if you, they
literally.
can get their hands on those kind of movies, they're going to watch them. So it makes sense that those would be the movies that they showed. Incidentally, Fistful of Rawhide is a real movie. I looked it up.
No shit, really? Huh.
From 1970.
Wow.
I was going to use it for a sponsor until I found out it was an actual movie. All right, so on to sequels and remakes.
On to sequels and remakes.
Rumors have abounded over the years regarding a movie sequel, but it has never materialized. On the film's DVD audio commentary, LQ Jones states that he had started to write a script sequel to the film that would have picked up right where the first film ended and featured a female warrior named Spike. And we would have seen this world through the eyes of a female instead of a male. Jones and Ellison collaborated on this short-lived effort. Ellison, however, has denied that development went beyond a short what-if conversation, and that any efforts were solely on Jones. According to Cult Movie 2, Jones had a sequel planned called A Girl and Her Dog, but the plan was scrapped when Tiger, the dog who played Blood, died. In a December 2003 interview, Jones claimed that he has been repeatedly approached to make a sequel, but funding is always an issue.
How the fuck did they get that dog to go on three legs anyway?
I don't. That was really impressive. If,
That
assuming,
was fucking brilliant.
assuming it was trained and not actually hurt, the dog limps.
I'm assuming they trained it.
I would hope so, and if so, that is bloody impressive.
Yeah.
But I think seeing it from a female perspective is interesting.
Well, right.
Getting the other side. Obviously, there's not going to be a down under because that would be pointless.
Oh, God, you hope not.
We've already seen that. We know that surprise.
Be seeing you.
But the post-apocalyptic desert of this universe from a female perspective could be fascinating.
Definitely.
Could be an entire movie.
And it should be really. I mean, it is kind of, like I said, the point of this movie. It is about all about the gender
Yeah.
relationships.
All right, so on to brains.
On to brains.
This movie got a lot better the second time I saw it. The ending really threw me the first time, and I think the whole down under section threw me too. It just suddenly became a different movie, and I just had trouble processing it, and then the end hit me upside the head. So I didn't really like it very much the first time. This time, knowing all of that was coming, I actually really enjoyed it. The only part that I had issues with was Johnson's performance in the scene with Robards, but it's Jason Robards and John Johnson. What do you want? I'm gonna go 4.
I'm right there with you, and this is only my first time seeing it, but it's such a ballsy film, and literally in some senses. But they kind of throw down and show what Disney should have been doing.
Oh yeah.
But then again, I think they did kind of take Cat from Outer Space after like a few years after this.
Yeah.
It's a movie that really makes you think,
Yeah.
and it was really hard to come up with a rating for this, but I'm going to stick with four because I mean I won't go all the way because of the
There are
whole
issues.
the weakness of the prisoner
Yeah.
act and all that.
All right, so what have we learned?
We learned also where the voice of Kit might have came from.
Actually, it wasn't
Oh, it wasn't the same guy. I had to
it's the
look it
same
up.
guy, I can't remember his name, but it was Tim McIntyre who did the voice of Blood, who also sang the theme song.
Oh, you know who else was in on the soundtrack of this? And I had to is that the same? It is. Ray Manzarek.
Oh yeah, he worked with Tim McIntyre.
Yeah.
And just real quickly, I learned that you don't have to be Disney to do a good talking animal movie.
Shaggy Dog.
Wow. They've done some good ones
Benji.
too. Cat from Outer Space was pretty good.
Yeah, actually it was.
All right, so until next week when we'll be reviewing Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh no, a shit trilogy.
We're starting another trilogy of shit, and I don't mean the cool animated D&D. I mean the 2001 with one of the Wayans and the girl from American Beauty. Her name is Thora Birch.
Damn, I was gonna go and watch the cartoons and just pretend I got confused.
Glad I clarified that.
Venture.
Until then, go to zombietakeout.com, check out the album art, the episode description, of course, the episode itself, which you're already listening to, links to find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+, links to subscribe via RSS and iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes, we'd really appreciate it. You'll also find the movie list, every movie we've reviewed so far, and every movie we're going to review. The request form, if you've got a movie you'd like to hear us review, please leave it on the request form. And the recommendations list. Kind of surprised this made it to the rec list, because
I
I wouldn't have
going
thought
in
so
with
going.
Don Johnson, I didn't think it was going to
No.
make it either, but
Having seen it one time before this, I didn't think it was going to make it.
I
But,
definitely would recommend it though,
oh,
just
absolutely.
to blow your mind.
If nothing else for the ending. The rest is good too, as we've said, but that ending will just rip your head off.
It's a seeing post-apocalypse done right.
Yeah, exactly. You can also email us, zombietakeout@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 414-368-ZTL1, or for the Alphanumerically Challenged,
You can go fuck yourself.
414-368-9861. Of course, always remember that you will always be calling from the middle of Milwaukee. And until next week, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you
There
are.
you are.
I could handle several hours on the rack to extricate myself from this disgusting display.
I think I have the title. I'll go through two. I think all of mine are good this week. I'll go
I
through
was having
weaker
trouble with
ones.
the
I've got the
title.
title covered then. Mad Crockett.
Ooh, nice.
Gets better.
Okay.
Crockett and Hooch.
Oh my God. Why wasn't I thinking Miami Vice? I'm such an idiot.
Or the obvious, My Dog Ate It. Which, if you know the movie, is very funny.
Yeah. But I don't know, I can't resist the Miami Vice references. Either one of those.
Crockett and Hooch does have a ring to it.
Fuck, man, that's good.
All right, we'll go with Crockett and Hooch.
All I could come up with was Fistful of Rape or Rapist Wit. But I think I Crockett and Hooch. Although My Dog Ate It is pretty fucking good too, but
Yeah.
you can't resist the Miami Vice
Crockett and Hooch,
references.
yeah.